Welcome to the Philly
Swing and a miss! Knocked him out! The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball!
The Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl!
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 2 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert and the tackle in the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon.
What's going on, boys?
How are you guys tonight?
Very well, Bill. Ready to talk some college football.
Doesn't get much better than that. Well, our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All your opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to the Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. Well, Keith, let's get right to it. I know you have some real high emotions about the NCAA Executive Board decision to reinstall Penn State's bowl eligibility effective immediately and to reinstate all scholarships. What a tremendous turn of events for the folks at Happy Valley.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We were waiting on that Mitchell report to come out up here. They've been rumored it would be the first or second week of September. There was no exact day of when it was going to come out. And there was, you know, everybody had known that that all the recommendations that that Mr. Free had recommended to Penn State, that they had finished 116 of the 119, and the other three had been well worked on. And there was also a little nasty rumor that that Penn State football was, or Coach Franklin was given a choice of bowl ban being lifted this year or scholarships being it was either or. That was the rumor going around as of last week, that that they were actually going to have a either or scenario where they would could be bowl eligible or they could have a full allotment of scholarships next year. And it was like putting Coach Franklin in a bad position, because it was like, okay, if he says, okay, no bowl, we want our scholarships back, you know, you're really screwing your seniors. So when I did hear the news yesterday that they actually did rescind the bowl ban, they are all eligible for a Big Ten as well as bowls, and then got the scholarships back at 85 next year, I was ecstatic. I mean, I was more than happy. You know, I never agreed with the sanctions whatsoever. You know, I don't think that the NCAA had the right to do what they did, because it was not a criminal affair, I guess you would say, not really a athletic situation or a university situation. But, you know, there's still a couple more that need to be rescinded, and I'm sure that they're going to be working on those. But could not be happier for the kids. I mean, these are the kids that, you know, no lack of a better word, these kids have gotten screwed since 2011 and 2012 with all these sanctions. It's not fair to them, but I'm really happy for them that they are eligible.
Well, I have a question for you. Do you think, you know, that was a rumor, I guess, about James Franklin. Do you know that if there was any truth to that? It just seems really odd to me that you have this big, giant thing going on, and that you would put it on the shoulders of the football coach. You know, I mean, it just seems kind of strange to me.
Yeah, to give him that much, I mean, there was a guy who's been in the university since February, and they're going to give him that much, you know, it's given a decision to him. So if you look at it that way, you're like, wow, you really can't believe that. But, you know, we have an athletic director. She's been here for a month now. And, you know, again, just happy for the kids, happy for the program, happy for the fans, happy for the students here. They could actually celebrate and say, you know, we we have something to look forward to at the end of the season. Bowl games are a reward for the players and for the coaching staff and for the university. But we're all very, very smart football men, and we know what the best thing with the bowls are. It's you get 20 to 25 more practices. That is the biggest thing about bowl games. And people say, oh, the kids get to go away. I mean, I don't care about that. I'd rather have Christian Hackenberg get 25 extra practices in, you know, with some players who are going to be studs next year. So just think about that. Just look at it like that, 25 more practices for these kids.
Absolutely huge for the growth of the program, getting to have those practices, no doubt about it. Well, yep. It seems like the next step, hopefully will be the reinstatement of all the Penn State and Joe Paterno wins. Those games did happen, by the way. They were played, and Penn State won them, and, they didn't just vanish into nowhere. So hopefully that's the next step in this whole deal and to make that all right as well.
Yeah, I mean, my thing about the whole Paterno situation and taking the wins away, that was just spiteful. There was no need to do that, none. There was no reason for Mark Emmert to go in there and say, we're going to take all your wins back from 1998. Why 1998? Because there was a criminal investigation. And what's that have to do with Joe Paterno and his football program? There was a criminal investigation of a guy who used to coach football at Penn State. Nothing was ever charged. He was never charged or never tried, never any of that. So why go back to that date? You know, I mean, why? You know, I don't understand it. I just think that there was a lot of people who did not like Joe, like how he ran the program and, you know, turned his nose up to some other people. And I think they had a chance to tinkle on his grave a little bit. And I think that that's what they did.
Yeah, and my buddy Tom Bradley, he got his one win wiped out as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Oh, geez. Well, I'm thrilled for what's happening up there. I think, as we've been saying, Penn State's on the right track anyway. I think they've got this thing going on. The James Franklin's really got the recruiting rolling now, and it's open season for him getting to add all these additional players. I mean, I'm looking for I don't know how good they'll be this year. We'll get into that a little bit more today and as we go on through the season, but you know, surely I think they're going to be bowl eligible, which will be great. But I think they had these additional scholarships, and they're ready. They're ready to make a move into Big Ten.
Completely agree. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the Big Ten later, but, you know, we'll talk about there. But obviously there's going to be another down here in the Big Ten after this past weekend's performance. But we'll get into that. Man,
in the same sense,
we're talking about Penn State being in the right direction. And we'll get into this later again. Huge, huge game this weekend versus Rutgers. I cannot tell you the importance of this game, you know, for Penn State and for recruiting and all that stuff. So we'll get into that.
Yes, we will. All right. Well, Terry, you're sitting there awful quiet. I know you have some feelings about the Penn State situation yourself, and I know you're a strong USC fan, a crazy USC fan, and you have some feelings about how that all went down as well, and USC has been forced to, serve their full penalty, where Penn State is not, Miami did not, but USC is, kind of had to carry the torch, I guess you would call it. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we're not going to get into the USC case in depth here because I might get a little too fired up for that, but they more than likely got a little railroaded by the NCAA, but we know the NCAA doesn't do things right. You know, USC was the first case among some of these other ones that you mentioned. There was, some things that went on that probably wasn't on par with what the NCAA should have been doing. But anyway, I digress a bit. We won't talk about USC. As it pertains to Penn State, what a great day. What a great opportunity for this coaching staff to capitalize on this good news and, further the momentum. You talked about it in terms of recruiting. James Franklin's one of the best recruiters in the country, and it's just going to get better for Penn State. You had mentioned earlier that, you're not quite sure how things are going to play out. We'll see how it plays out this season, but Ohio State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Michigan, whomever in the Big Ten, they better be careful because Penn State is on the move. You know, you watch in the next couple years, They're gonna have talent like they had back on that 1994 team. This is gonna be a really good situation. So with Penn State with this case, this was the right thing to do. I mean, come on, The NCAA, they've mishandled most of these cases over the last 5 or 6 years. And in this case in particular, they most certainly mishandled. They had no jurisdiction over this. I think Keith mentioned, you know, this really is, there's a criminal aspect to this, which, you know, is being dealt with. The people that were involved, you know, the proper authorities will take a look at, you know, who should be held accountable for what. But as it pertains to the football program, the NCAA had no business going in there and taking away scholarships and dealing out bowl bans. I mean, that was just ridiculous. So I couldn't be happier for Penn State and their program. I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. I think from here on out, they move forward. You got one of the best coaches in college football, one of the best recruiters. It's obviously one of the premier programs in the country. You have great resources. You have a great stadium. You have a great alumni. You have everything that you need to be a player in the Big Ten and also a player for the national championship year in and year out. And that's one of the things that when you talk to Penn State fans, I think, you know, we've kind of gotten this situation where they're kind of content with certain things. And I believe if you look at the numbers, they have the fifth best overall record in the Big Ten since they joined the Big Ten, which to me is unacceptable because at a place like Penn State with the right coach, with, you know, all, like I said, all the resources in place, this is the kind of program that's going to compete for Big Ten championships from here on out, as well as being a player in the national picture. So I couldn't be more fired up for Penn State. I think it's a wonderful day, and I know they're excited about all these all the opportunities that lie ahead.
Well, I agree. Keith, let's move on a little bit. I wanted to get from you, you know, we've talked about this for a couple weeks leading into this, but give us an update on the reunion of the 1994 undefeated team. It had to be great to actually see everybody, and, you know, I'm sure you probably stay in contact with a bunch of them, but to actually see everybody, be able to sit down and talk war stories and maybe throw back a beverage or two and how that went. And I also wanted to ask you, I saw a couple photos, and I have to ask you, where did the rest of Marco and Bucky go? Those guys are about half the size they were when they were playing.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Those guys definitely have taken it off. I mean, Marco specifically, he's down, you know, he played in the NFL at 315. You know, he's probably below 250 right now. And, you know, he's had some medical issues and back issues and this and that. So he's more of a, you have to lose it because, you know, you're for his life, you know. I mean, he has a spinal fusion going on right now, so he's been in some severe pain, so he has to lose weight to not carry so much weight, so he doesn't put so much pressure on his back. But, yeah, I mean, we had a great time, and you're not lying about the couple cold beverages and the war stories. You know, it was funny because it was just like, you know, we're all sitting around, and, you know, there's 50 to 100 people at the first night's party, and, you know, some people have their kids and this and that, but it just follows suit. I mean, you looked around, and all of a sudden there's five offensive linemen. We're all sitting together, you know. So it was just like it wasn't planned, but, you know, we were obviously always tight and roommates and this and that. So we all sat around, and, you know, it was an outside little deck to Damon's where we hang out. Went out there, and some guys were, you know, all fired up to go downtown. I said, you know what, honestly, I'm with 10, 15 people right here. I don't want to go anywhere. I want to sit here until they tell us to leave. You know, just telling stories of this and that. What are you doing now? Where are you at? Great stories and just a wonderful time. You know, Saturday, you know, got up early, did the whole thing, had a catered tailgate, and everybody stopped by for a couple more pops. And, you know, just a good time. Beautiful day. Very hot, very sunny. And then I went into the halftime, and, you know, you got to announce it at halftime. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but it was the first time, I believe, they actually mentioned Joe Paterno's name on a loudspeaker, and there was a rather loud applause for that when that happened. So I believe that was the first time that he actually had his name mentioned, because I think in the 73 team last year, his name was not mentioned over the loudspeaker, but this year it was. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but some guys actually wore khakis and black shoes in honor of Coach. I just wore my black coaching shoes, so a lot of guys wore black shoes walking across the field just to show a little nod to Joe Paterno. So,
very cool, absolutely. I was going to ask you from that coaching staff. Did any of those guys? Well, first of all, how was your talk with Franny Ganner on your show, and how many coaches were able to attend? I was trying to think back of who all was part of that staff, and I know Coach Anderson was part of that, and
yep.
and of course Franny, but several
yep.
of the others I'm sure have passed.
Yeah, Franny was there at my show last Wednesday. It was great. You know, we talked about a half hour. It was just, you know, me and him going back and forth about just different stories. And, you know, hearing the stories from the coach's perspective was pretty cool. I mean, him sitting there saying, you know, he always hated the game day meetings. And to hear him say that, I was like, well, what the hell are we doing for, you know? You know, you sit around a hotel waiting for a game that night, and you're trying to meet two or three times. It's just like, you know, you just want to relax and, you know, they're trying to keep your head in the game. And to hear Franny say, you know, I always hated those meetings and all, that was a little different. But just how, you know, how cool and calm we were and he was about all this whole stuff. And, but the Illinois, in the Illinois game in 94 when they had to come back from 21 down. And he was just like, it was, and his recollection is the same as ours. And that was like, no one panicked. No one, it didn't mean anything to anybody. Like, okay, we're down 21 points. We got this. You know, we got time. So as of for Friday night, the reunion, Coach Anderson was there. Yes, Dick Anderson was there. Franny Gannon was there. Our offensive line coach, Craig Service, he was there for the weekend. It was good to get him there because, you know, obviously he sat at the table with us and had a good time with us. So we had a couple beers and tell some stories about all offensive line meeting rooms. And let me see. Now, I know that Sue Paterno showed up and got a picture with the guys later in the night, so it was just a good weekend all together. I had a real good time. But Joe Serra has passed on. Scrap, obviously, is in West Virginia. Let me try to think now. Who else? Bill Kenny is at Central Michigan or Western Michigan, one of those. Yeah, I think Western Michigan. Bill Kenny coaches the O-line there. Franny was there, so Kenny Jackson could not show up, but yeah, so it was a good time. We had a real good show and had a great time.
Very cool. Well, let's move on and talk about the ball game. The Nittany Lions with a 21-7 victory over a pretty tough Terry Bowden-led Akron team. Christian Hackenberg, he put up pretty good numbers when it was all said and done. 22 of 36 for 319 yards and three touchdowns, but he did throw a couple picks that, you know, that hurt a little bit. And, the offensive line struggled a little bit more in the run game as they did earlier. But, you know, we talked about the Ireland hangover. You guys, you think we had some of that, or, you know, you think it was just a little bit of a down week this week and that Akron was a pretty decent opponent? What do you think, Terry?
Well, I think it was a combination of many things, Bill. I think, yes, the arrival back from Ireland, you know, getting acclimated back to, you know, their time zone, that most certainly, you know, impacted their preparation during the week. I mean, you have to most certainly take that into account. You know, how could it not? I also think Akron is a solid football team. Look, you know, some of the experts out there predicted them to finish second in their conference, and they have a very good quarterback, as you saw, a guy that can make some plays and, you know, do some different things out there. They have some athletes on both sides of the ball. I don't know if you picked up on one of the guys, former Ohio State defensive lineman Pittman, that was out there for Akron. He did a pretty good job against Penn State. And they competed. And like you said, they're well coached. Terry Bowden, you know, obviously was a good coach there at Auburn for a while. So it was going to be a tough opponent. And, you know, you have to take into account the fact that, you know, Akron is obviously a MAC team. And whenever you get one of those MAC teams coming in and they're playing one of the big boys, they're always going to give you their best effort. And I think Penn State was a little bit sluggish. And I think we all expected that a little bit. You know, Penn State, I think, is really starting to show, you know, who they are, both good and bad. You know, after we have, you know, two games, you know, two sample sets to take a look at, I think you start to see, you know, where they're good and, you know, where they really need some work. And as you mentioned, you know, that quarterback, obviously, one of the best quarterbacks in the country, especially as you look at it, you know, in terms of moving to the next level. I mean, if there isn't a prototypical quarterback, you know, if Hackenberg to me is the prototypical quarterback in college football. I mean, everything that guy brings to the table, his poise, his arm strength, his ability to, you know, to make all the throws. I mean, you guys are so blessed at Penn State to have a quarterback like this, and I just look forward to seeing him, you know, continue to get better. And decision making, you know, that's going to be part of the process. He obviously still struggles every once in a while and makes a few bad decisions here and there. But they got a great quarterback. They got tons of weapons. Obviously, the wide receiver position is really coming together. They have some guys that can really make some plays, Lewis, Hamilton, you know, Godwin. They got guys all over the place there. The offensive line, like you mentioned, is, you know, still there's a little bit of lack of execution up front. They're not quite gelling yet. You know, the run game has been really, really difficult for them. I think they had 106 yards rushing in this game, but a lot of it came late in the game when Akron started to wear down. So a lot of good things, a lot of bad things. My personal opinion with the running back situation is I'd like to see them use Belton a little bit more in the slot, try to get him the ball in space. You saw him score that touchdown on the wheel route there. Try to find ways to integrate him into the pass game a little bit more. Catches the ball really well. Played wide receiver, obviously, in the past. I'd actually like to see them give Akil Lynch a little bit more of a shot. I think he's the most natural tailback that they have on that roster. He just has a knack for the position. You know, when you see him, you know, just cut, just the way he moves, everything is natural. He reminds me a little bit of Silas Red, just a little bit. And he averaged 6.4 yards per carry last game, led the team. I just think he gives them a little bit of an added dimension there, a combo of a guy that has a little bit of a burst but also can run through some arm tackles. So I'd like to see Lynch get a little bit more action there. That's my personal opinion. As you mentioned, Hack wasn't great, 22 of 36 for 319, three touchdowns, a couple, questionable decisions, as you mentioned. But the defense was great again. They only gave up 277 yards of total offense. I mean, they're active, they're athletic, they have good depth. The front is really good. I mean, my goodness, they were just getting after both teams, in these opening two games, and they're going to continue to, wreak havoc up there and just create a lot of problems for teams. And, they're aggressive. They bring guys from the second level. You see guys coming, from the secondary. So, I mean, all in all, the defense looked great. The offense is getting better in some areas. Like to see the running game get better. But if they continue to do this with the Big Ten, and we're going to get into this later, I think, with the Big Ten kind of fumbling around a little bit, we talked about this in the first show that we did. Penn State might have a chance to beat a few of these teams that, we thought were, they were going to be the underdog, and they still might be. But I think with some of these pieces in place, they might have a chance to do some things that, maybe a lot of us didn't expect them to do. So that's my take on the game. I like what's going on, and I look forward to next week's game against Rutgers. As Keith pointed out, that's going to be a game. That's going to be a lot of fun, and I think we're going to get into that later. But that's my take.
Keith, what's your take on the game? And let's roll right into that Rutgers conversation.
Yeah, I mean, very great analysis right there. Very impressive. I wanted to get into the whole offensive line play. It is what it is. I mean, you said that you're starting to share what we do and what they do well, what they do not so well. And obviously, they got to be able to run the ball. I mean, they're going to have to be able to run the ball. Eventually, they're going to need to get a couple tough first downs this year. And if they don't get it going, they're going to be in trouble. That being said, you got Senator Hackenberg, who has an off day. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he had an off day, and he threw for 319 yards. So, I mean, how many guys are they going to have an off day like that? So, where he wasn't real sharp in the first half, they really picked up in the second half. But I think that the people who are really making this team right now on the front seven, or I'm sorry, the whole defense, excuse me, but especially the defensive line, I mean, they are getting off the ball and sort of just wreaking havoc in the backfield right now on the both teams they've played so far. And, if they do that this week, I mean, I think Noah's going to have a pretty tough game. I mean, they got to pressure this kid. Rutgers got a pretty good offensive line. I saw the one game they played earlier this year against Washington State, and Washington State's not a pushover now. And Rutgers hung on them pretty good. So, I mean, Penn State's got to be ready. I mean, this game scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah.
But if our front seven, front four can wreak havoc on Nova, I think we'll be all right. But that's a big if. So, it is a huge border game. I mean, rivalry game. I just can't believe how the coach is talking about that team from Pennsylvania. I mean, come on, man. Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler, they both died a long time ago. Coach Lund. You're going to use that same tired line. It is what it is. He's trying to make a rivalry out of it. He's trying to get his fans going, get them all there, and just be a big game for them, which is it's the natural rival. It is what it is. Was it ever really a rivalry? It's what, 35-2? They lost. They lost the first game they played, and they lost in 88 when Dick Anderson was coaching. So is that really a rivalry? I don't know, but they want to make it a rivalry. Hey, Penn State has done very well over the years recruiting New Jersey. You go into New Jersey and you get your booty kicked this weekend, it's not going to be that easy going into New Jersey next year. Trust me.
Absolutely. Well, they've got their hands full over there at Rutgers just to start with. But, Well, we'll see. Yep. I did want to throw out, I don't know that we mentioned the stats on the defense for the running game. Akron was 25 carries for 69 yards, 2.8 yards a carry. So hats off again to the defense.
I mean, they're playing great. Sean Spencer's got them going, man. He's got them flowing pretty good out there.
They do. All right, well, let's take a break and thank our sponsor right quick, and then we'll get on to talking about some crazy Big Ten and national games this week. So we want to say, do you like shopping online? And if you do, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on each purchase from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.southbeachshopping.com. That's south-beach-shopping.com. And click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in /register to become a preferred customer. That's it. It's free. And you can look around at all the products and click on the all stores tab and check out all 3,000 network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage and click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, and leave a message. Okay, well, let's move on right quick to touch on the Temple Owls. Temple played Navy. Keith, I believe that you went with the Owls in that game, and Terry and I used our brain and not our heart, and we took Navy. And we were the winners in that game. But, you know, Navy's going to beat some people. They ran the ball 63 times for 487 yards in that game. They couldn't, you know, Temple couldn't stop quarterback Keenan Russell at 173 yards for the midshipman. And Temple got a fine game from their own quarterback, P.J. Walker. He keeps getting better. He threw for 240 yards, a couple touchdowns, ran for 71 yards. Temple has nothing to be ashamed of, but I think this Navy team is going to beat some people. What do you think, Keith?
Well, I mean, as I said, it's tough to practice against an option team. I mean, you don't see it live ever. The only time you ever see it live is that first play of the game on Saturday. So, you know, I thought it was one of those things. I thought that Temple had taken that next step, and I thought that, you know, having watched a couple games, watching that Ohio State game, having that film would have helped out Temple. And, you know, it was disappointing. And I would have loved to see Temple go 2-0. But you're right. I think Navy's got a good football team right there. When they hung out with Ohio State and for a long time, should have had the game was a lot closer than 34-17. So they're going to surprise some people this year, no doubt.
Terry, what's your thoughts on that game?
Well, I think my first thought is 487 yards rushing. I mean, you got to love the triple option. As Keith pointed out, one of the more difficult things to prepare for, especially when you only have, you know, basically less than 1 week to do it. But Temple, I think you have to be excited about what they're doing. I know Keith's excited. I mean, you can hear it in his voice. But, I mean, them being competitive and having a chance to win two games after, you know, last season really struggling, and, you know, the new coaching staff in place is doing a really good job. And, hey, look, they should be able to get some pretty good quality athletes out of the Philadelphia area to represent Temple University there. So, I mean, this is exciting for Temple. They came up short, but as you guys pointed out, Navy's a tough team, and Navy's been there with the big guys. They played competitively with the big guys. So, you know, I didn't expect Temple to win this game, but just being as competitive as they were, and, you know, obviously at the skill position, at the quarterback, as you mentioned, just having a tremendous game, Walker there. Hey, I mean, it's a lot of positive things, and I think, you know, a lot of good things for Temple. And as you guys pointed out, Navy's going to be difficult. They're always difficult. So that's my thought.
All right. Well, moving on to the other local game, Villanova and Fordham, 50-6 Wildcats. So, you know, if they would have snuck that game out at Syracuse and come back with a blowout against Fordham, you know, they're on their way as well. They're going to be tough to handle in their division. What's your thought on that one, Terry?
Well, I didn't see the game, so I'll just come out and say it. I wasn't able to find the game, but Villanova, they've had a good program. I mean, playing at that Division One, Double A, you know, level, subdivision level. They've been competitive. They've been in the mix for national titles, and it's a big win. I mean, especially after coming off of a tough game against a, you know, a Power Five conference team in Syracuse. I mean, my goodness. I mean, 50-6. I mean, that's a good win. Like I said, I didn't catch the game, but just being competitive in a game, you know, the prior week against a Power Five conference, to me, that means they have some pretty good football players on that team. So, again, I didn't see it, but good win for Nova.
Keith, any thoughts? Did you get a chance to look at that at all?
I did not, but, you know, it's a classic example of that's a game you're supposed to win. So they went out and did that. They out, you know, by beating up Fordham like that, and that's what they should be doing. So good for them.
They're on their way. That's right. All right,
Bill,
let's move on.
Bill, before we move on, the question is, did you get a chance to watch the Nova game?
I did not. I did actually I did read up on it, though, but it was 50-6. I figured there wasn't a whole lot of details to get into. It was a whooping.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, so let's move on to a couple of the huge Big Ten games. And, Terry, we'll get you to start off on this Michigan State-Oregon game. But I guess my take on this game, Oregon 28-3 in the second half kind of tells the whole story, where Michigan State looked like they were gaining some pretty solid control in the second quarter, but Oregon came back out, and what fantastic quarterback play by both Connor Cook and Marcus Mariota in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first and foremost, I think we probably have to touch on the, you know, disastrous day that the Big Ten had. I mean, I think that's probably the first place to start with, and it kind of segues into this game, because for Michigan State, for me, I don't look at them any differently than I did going into this. I mean, when you really look at that game, you watch that game, and I watched the whole game, it was a lot more competitive than that score indicated. And I think Michigan State, if they were to face Oregon again on a neutral site, I think they have the pieces in place to most certainly to beat Oregon. I really do believe that. So even though they most certainly, you know, gave in the second half, and for anybody that, you know, hasn't had a chance to watch Oregon play at home over the years, Oregon is probably one of the toughest places to play in the entire country. Autzen Stadium is crazy. The fans are absolutely insane. The atmosphere is electric all the time. Just traveling to that location is difficult. It's a very strange place. It's an odd place. For anybody that goes in there, I just give them credit for, especially out of conference, going up, you know, to Oregon and playing that game. So I had a feeling that Oregon would win the game. The score, to me, again, doesn't really indicate how competitive that game was. I think Michigan State most certainly is a really quality team. I still think they're one of the five or six best teams in college football. And, again, I think if they play that game on a neutral site, I think they have an opportunity to beat Oregon. Now, Oregon impressed me because they were more physical. One of the knocks on Oregon over the years has been, well, when they play, you know, if they play Alabama or if they play LSU or when they played Auburn in the championship game or if they play Stanford, a team that's really physical that beat them the last 2 years, can Oregon stand up to them, and can they be physical enough to run the ball well enough where they can be efficient offensively? And they did that in this game. Michigan State's one of the more physical teams in college football, and Oregon, with a lot of young players, they were able to be efficient both running the ball and throwing the ball. And as you pointed out, Marcus Mariota, our Heisman pick, I think two out of the three picked Marcus to win the Heisman. He obviously was awesome. He's got so many skill players, lots of speed. Like I said, they have a couple young running backs, Royce Freeman, who's a freshman running back, kind of a bowling ball type of guy, and Thomas Piner, just tremendous speed. I haven't seen him actually break out in the open yet, but when he gets out in the open, you're going to see some pretty darn good speed. Wide receivers, they're loaded. The defense, you know, Michigan State kind of had their way early on, and in the first half they were able to get a lot accomplished. I mean, let's be honest, but Michigan State's a really good team with Connor Cook, one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten, and he's kind of positioning himself as one of the top probably 10 or 12 quarterbacks in the country. He's playing at that kind of level. Lippitt at wide receiver, they have tons of weapons. The running game obviously is very sound there. The defense, they're kind of finding their way. There was probably three or four plays where the defense broke down. There was some coverage breakdown, and they gave up some big plays, and that's kind of how Oregon pulled away in the second half. It was really – there was a fine line there. If they don't have those breakdowns and they're able to kind of, curtail Oregon a little bit there and they don't give up those long yards plays, I think they have a chance to win that game. So, you know, even with the Big Ten, the reason why I preface this by talking about the disastrous weekend that was the Big Ten was because I think Michigan State's in a really tough situation now, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this, but – I think it's going to be really difficult for any Big Ten team, regardless of what happens from here on out, to make it to the playoff. I think the perception has been the last 4 or 5 years that things have been difficult for the Big Ten. But with this weekend where you had – it wasn't just Ohio State losing to Virginia Tech. It wasn't just Michigan State losing to Oregon. And when people just see that score, they just think blowout. It wasn't, you know, Nebraska – well, what it was Nebraska struggling, Northwestern losing again, Purdue getting blown out. I mean, it was just a culmination of a lot of games where they really struggled and they did not look good. You know, Penn State was probably one of the few teams that actually looked pretty good over the weekend. But I really think it plays poorly for Michigan State. And even though I think they're going to probably win out and I think they're going to be a really, really quality team at the end of the year, even sitting at 12-1 after they win the Big Ten championship, I think it's going to be really difficult for any Big Ten team after what happened. And it's horrible to say that after week two, but the perception when you listen to the SEC fans, when you listen to the Big 12 fans, when you listen to anybody out there that's not pro-Big Ten, the perception of it is really poor. You know, going in and after this, it doesn't help. So I kind of feel bad because Michigan State, to me, like I said, I feel like that's a really quality football team.
I mean, I really can't argue with that. I mean, this was the weekend that Penn State, that the Big Ten had to go out and, you know, put all doubt in the naysayers, you know. Did they do that? No, they absolutely went out there and tanked. I mean, to go back to your thing about the Michigan State getting into the Final Four, right?
Yes.
Now, what if they go to the Rose Bowl and beat Oregon? You know, what if they run the table right now, Oregon runs the table? Are they going to have any of that? Are they going to have their normal Rose Bowl, or would they go to the four? So I'm just
trying to figure this out. No, they would go to the four. So the Rose Bowl will be a part of the playoff. It'll be one of the semifinals.
So Michigan State could actually play Oregon, or is that possible?
Well, they would have to make it to the playoff. I mean, well, they could play in a different bowl game. If they couldn't play in the Rose Bowl, the Rose Bowl would be one of the semifinal games.
Okay, I got you then. Again, I said it last week. This was a big proving weekend for the Big Ten. I had a lot of I was very enthusiastic about Michigan and Notre Dame, and then just getting absolutely embarrassed at Notre Dame. I mean, 31-0, losing to Notre Dame on national TV, brutal loss, absolutely horrendous loss. Michigan State, you know, that was our big boy. That was the Big Ten's best team going out anywhere. Thinking about, so a tough place to play, which you say, I've heard nothing but the same. Going out to Alston at Oregon and competing, winning the game, and then just, you know, dying in the end. You know, that's when the Big Ten is supposed to take over and win these games, and that's happened 2 weeks in a row now. You know, it happened to Wisconsin versus LSU the first week where they had the game, and then they just died out in the end. Is it going back to the Big Ten of like the last 15, 20 years when it was always like these big fat guys running around and lean on you, but, you know, they wear out faster than the faster guys. So is it still that? I don't know. Sparty, they were playing pretty good, but I mean, Oregon just took it. You know, Oregon won that game more than Michigan State lost that game. I know we want to get into this Michigan game, right, Bill?
Yes, we are.
Oh, my God, that was embarrassing. I mean, to have that on national television is absolutely embarrassing. You know, thank God our other team, our other bell cow, Ohio State, was losing in a close game, so now to turn the Michigan game off and watch Ohio State get beat up by Virginia Tech. So, Michigan, I don't know. How hot do you think that Brady Hoke seat is right now?
Oh, awful. Awful. You know what? One thing I wanted to hit you guys with in that game. You know, if I asked you, if a team had 31 carries for 54 yards and only 280 yards of total offense, and only had the ball 27 of the 60 minutes, what would you think? Well, those were Notre Dame's numbers.
Wow.
They only rushed the ball for 54 yards in that game on 31 carries and won the game 31-0. Because Michigan had 4 turnovers and was 4-for-13 on third downs. And Michigan was atrocious. But defensively, you know, the stats don't look all that bad, but they were not very good.
No, they weren't, Bill. And one of the things that I kind of look at with the Big Ten right now is, you know, outside of a very, very few teams, the quarterback play in the Big Ten is not good right now. I mean, when you look at some of these teams, like you mentioned Wisconsin, you mentioned Michigan, you know, you look at some of these other teams that were struggling, Nebraska, you know, these teams are a little bit more one-dimensional than you want to be. And in Wisconsin against LSU, when you go 8-for-24 for 50 yards, and Gardner struggled again at, you know, against Notre Dame, and you know, some of these quarterbacks are just not getting the job done. And Ohio State, obviously, yeah. I mean, you know, the young kid, he's doing the best that he can do, but he was, I think, 9-of-24 in that game against Virginia Tech. That's not good enough. You know, these teams that they're playing, I mean, they're too talented. The game is just, you need to be more balanced than that. And outside of really Michigan State and Penn State, the quarterback playing the Big Ten has been really bad so far.
Yeah. Let's talk about that Ohio State game. You know, I'll tell you what, I think the Buckeyes are in big, big trouble. You know, Virginia Tech goes in there and plays them toe-to-toe. The quarterback play, as you mentioned, Terry, was atrocious. 9-for-29, 219 yards for JT Barnett, or JT Barrett. 4-for-16 on third downs. And people are just moving up and down the field on them defensively. I think the Buckeyes are in big, big trouble out there. Keith, what do you think?
I mean, I hope so. We're coming to the Big Ten season, so I'm quite content with that, in my opinion. You know, I'm not a big fan of Mr. Urban, so you know, it is what it is. It's just, God, again, I go back to I was so fired up for this weekend with all those guys, with all these teams playing these big games, and it was the Big Ten made their, you know, came back, you know. Last year was the bowl games. You know, 2 years ago they had lost all the bowl games, and last year they were competitive in a lot of the bowl games, won a couple of the bowl games. Wasn't a successful year for the Big Ten, so this was a logical next step, and then it goes out there, and, you know, Sparty, Michigan, and then Ohio State. You know, it's just the quarterback play is really bad, I think. My brother-in-law is a Buckeye fan, so we watched the game here late night, and he's just sitting there, and he was just watching him, and I was sort of, like, laughing. Like, he was just throwing the ball. I mean, it was just like, you know, not doing any kind of reads, just throwing the ball and getting rid of it. And Virginia Tech played a great game. Coach Beamer had his guys rocking and rolling. I mean, hey, man, I played out there. Very tough place to play, very tough place to win. And Virginia Tech was out there the first time they were doing it, and they handed it to them pretty good, so... you know, maybe Virginia Tech can stand up to Florida State maybe this year in the ACC. You know?
Yeah, well, we'll see. They sure put on a good show the other night. Well, hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't let you guys gloat a little bit on your USC Trojans and winning that 13-10 slugfest. What a football game. They're the kind of games I like. You could keep them 51-48 games. That was a knockdown, drag-out slugfest, old school stuff with some running the ball or some throwing the ball, but a lot of running. Javarius Allen, 23-for-154. Man, I loved it. What a great game. But I'll let you guys gloat because you both had the Trojans.
So who's going to gloat first?
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to the coach Hayden running down on the field. That was a beautiful thing.
That
was crazy to me, but you know, Terry, go ahead, man. It's your team.
Well, all right. I'll start with Hayden. That was weird. That was definitely odd. I don't know what Sark was thinking. I don't know why he was texting the AD to come down and talk to the refs during the game. I think Sark, in his press conference, he's already come out and said that it probably wasn't one of the shining moments in his career. So Pat Hayden is a classy guy, one of the, you know, the smarter individuals in college football that's involved in college football. So I kind of feel bad because he's getting a little bit of a bad rap, and I think all he was really trying to do was just support his coach, which, you know, any head coach would want that from their AD, but he most certainly didn't follow the proper procedures there. But anyway, on to the game. So
I have to tell you, Terry, but what it looks like to me, just because I just have to say this to you, it looks like the little boy that called his daddy to fight his battle.
A little bit like that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really care for it either. And obviously, you know, I'm a fan, but very, very, very strange, very odd. But the game itself, I think, you know, Stanford absolutely controlled the tempo. They controlled the pace from, the beginning of the game to the end of the game. They forced USC to play their style of play, which is in a phone booth. I know Bill was very excited. He loved seeing the two extra tackles in the game as tight ends and lining up and running for 3 yards every play. The first half may have set college football back 20 years. I'm not sure. It was definitely a slugfest. With USC's depleted roster, Stanford is very conservative. I think they were, it was kind of like a boxing match. They wanted to land a bunch of body shots early in the game and then hope by the end of the game they were able to kind of just run through USC, which they've done. They've won 5 of the last 7 games against them. So, that was their plan. Unfortunately for them, they had a lot of uncharacteristic, penalties and turnovers, and they didn't execute. They were inside the red zone 6 times and came away with 10 points. Inside the scoring zone, they just couldn't execute. Once they got inside 30 yards, they just could not execute. So Stanford was kind of disappointing, from that standpoint. But USC, look, they held on. They held their ground. They fought Stanford within a phone booth for 60 minutes. They did just enough in the second half to take the lead 13-10 on Hadari's 53-yard field goal. So that's 2 years in a row that kid has booted the game-winning field goal against Stanford, which is pretty impressive, especially considering the kid struggled quite a bit, actually, the last couple years. But USC did a lot of good things. Buck Allen, as you mentioned, had 154 yards, probably one of the more underrated running backs in the country. Very talented kid out of Florida, down in Bill's neck of the woods. But it was a great game. It was a lot of fun to watch, especially in the second half for me. I think things opened up a little bit there. USC is very happy to start the season 2-0, and when you look at what they have the rest of the season, it's pretty favorable in terms of playing the right teams at home and playing some of those teams that they should beat on the road. So I could very easily see USC, winning the rest of their games until the last two where they face UCLA and Notre Dame. That very well could happen. Arizona State and Arizona will be tough games, but they'll be favored in both of those games. So if they do what they're supposed to do, USC has a chance to make a little bit of noise. And I know Keith picked them to win the Pac-12 South, so that would make you look like a smart man, Mr. Keith.
Yes, sir. That's called Split Medding Beer with Steve Sarkisian in Canada in my sixth game professional career in Canada. I played with Steve Sarkisian, so.
Where did you play at? What city?
We were in Saskatchewan.
Oh, I've been there. I've been there plenty of times.
Yes. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of the world. That's the only reason I just picked Sark because I like him. I like the way he coaches. I like the way he plays. His teams play. So I just think that, Oregon gets a lot of love out there. I think Stanford's going to take a step back this year. And I'm on there. I think UCLA was a little bit overrated. But I think everybody's jumping on their bandwagon, so I just liked him as a dark horse, and it's proven me right. So I like him as a coach, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you like him calling his daddy?
I don't know exactly what it was about. I didn't read into it. I didn't look into it enough to.
All I know
is him running on the field and
Keith, he texted Hayden. He texted Pat Hayden to come down to talk to the refs during the game.
Like, this was during about a play, or I saw –
Yep,
it was
just
in general?
It was both. Okay, there's been a lot of back and forth with regard. First of all, the Pac-12 refs are the worst refs in all of college football. That there's like a running joke about how poor they officiate games. And both Stanford and USC were complaining about the refs all game long. And it was a culmination of years of bad officiating and also just I think the intense moment of what was going on there. It was a big game for both teams, a really big game for Sark. So I think it just got the best of him, and he ended up, calling down Hayden, and Hayden came down. And like I said, it put Hayden in a really difficult situation.
No doubt about it. I mean, and then the only thing about Hayden is he's on that executive committee that's going to pick the Final Four, right? He's part of that committee that's going to be doing that. So
that's right.
That's what I said. That's why other people are pretty upset that he's got to – Sarkisian's got to think about it, but so does Hayden. Oh, well, I guess the thing that surprised me is why would the head football coach be carrying his cell phone on the field? That was bizarre to even start with.
Well, he's a big recruiter. He likes to recruit during the game. So I think he's posting it. He's hitting up recruits on Twitter. Did you see that play? No. I honestly, I don't know. There was a lot. There was other rumors. There was speculation that somebody in compliance actually, you know, was the facilitator of it. But Sark said in his press conference that he was the one that actually reached out to Hayden. So who knows? Maybe he grabbed one of his assistant coaches and said, "Let me borrow your phone." I don't know.
Pretty bizarre. Yep. Pretty bizarre. Hey, it's another good start to the season, though. As we go, I'm sure that won't be the only bizarre thing we're going to see, but I don't think we'll see any more ADs on the sidelines. That's probably not going to work.
Probably not.
All right. Well, you guys, you know, as you start to get a little older, some of those aches and pains start to really take over. For me, it was a chronic right shoulder from too much football and too many games behind the plate. It got to the point that it was really affecting my quality of life, and I finally listened to a friend that kept suggesting I go to www.southbeachshopping.com and order a bottle of OPC3. It's an all-natural isotonic product that reduces inflammation. I took a couple capsules a day, mixed with water, for about 3 weeks, and my shoulder pain went away. It still pops and cracks, but it doesn't hurt, and that's all that matters. I'm back golfing and even pitching batting practice again. It's OPC3, and it's available at www.south-beach-shopping.com. To register for free, click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register to become a preferred customer. That's it. Type in OPC3 in the search bar, and you can drill down and read all the details. OPC3 is now part of my early morning routine, and I'm glad it is. All right, well, let's take a look at our predictions from last week and see how we did, and we'll make this week's picks, and we'll see where we stand for the season so far. So our week one tally was Keith at 4-2, Terry at 2-4, and Bill at 5-1. So our week two prediction, Akron at Penn State, we all had PSU in that game, so we're all winners there. Navy at Temple. As we mentioned earlier, Terry and Bill took Navy, and Keith, you took Temple, so you dropped that one. We all took Villanova in that powerhouse matchup against Fordham. USC at Stanford, I was the loser of that game, taking Stanford, while you two both took the Trojans. Michigan State at Oregon, again, you guys whooped me on that one. I was the Michigan State guy. Terry, Keith, you took Oregon in that, right? Don't I have that correct?
Me? Or what?
Yeah.
Terry or me?
Did you take Oregon?
I don't think so. I had started that thing, didn't I?
Yeah, maybe you did, and I wrote it down wrong. I thought it was odd that you would have taken them, but we'll have to correct that one. Michigan,
yeah.
Notre Dame, Keith, you took the Wolverines, and that wasn't a very good pick, as it turned out.
Woo-hoo, yeah.
And Terry and I took the Fighting Irish there. In the sleeper game, we had Virginia Tech, Ohio State, and all of us went upset with Virginia Tech, and we're all winners there. So, Keith, that drops you to 4-3 for the week. Terry with a perfect 7-0 run. Nice job as you get back in the hunt. And Bill ends up 5-2. So, after our 2 weeks now, Bill is 10-3. Terry's 9-4. Keith, you go to 8-5. So, what do you think, Terry? 7-0, pretty impressive with some pretty good games being played.
Well, the Villanova game, that was really the tough one out of the group. I went back and forth. I went with the hometown team on that one, the local team. No, it was a better week than the first week. Let's just say that.
All right. Well, this week there's not a lot of the big marquee matchups, so we're going with the local guys and. Obviously, we're all going to probably take Penn State or Rutgers, I think. At least I know Keith and I are. Terry, are you on board for the Nittany Lions?
You know what? I think I have a crush on, a man crush on Hackenberg, but I am going to go with Rutgers in this game.
Jeez.
Wow.
I know. And you know what? I think Penn State will. I think they'll play well, and it'll. I think for Rutgers, this has got to be the biggest game of the year. Forget about any other game they play the rest of the season. As Keith mentioned earlier, from a recruiting standpoint, you've got a program like Penn State continually coming into your neck of the woods and taking the best players and taking them to Happy Valley with them. This is an absolute statement game for Rutgers. The first one in the Big Ten at home. It's going to be rocking. New Jersey's going to be crazy. The lights are going to be lit in New York. Not only in New Jersey, but in New York. It's going to, the atmosphere is going to be insane. I think Penn State, with that offensive line, they're going to have to play better. They're going to have to run the football. I like Rutgers in terms of what they do at running the football with their running back. James is a really good player. They have enough weapons on the outside to compete with Penn State. And it's really going to come down to something that you mentioned earlier, Bill. And Keith, you guys talked about the defensive line getting after Nova and forcing him in. Nova's been prone to a lot of mistakes. So if they can do that, you know, I think Penn State will win the game. But if they can keep Nova upright, if they give him time to distribute the ball to some of the playmakers, because of the atmosphere, because it's the first game, because of all the things we talked about, I'm going to go Rutgers.
Wow. Well, that's good reasoning, but you're going to lose.
Well, for your guys' sake, I hope so.
This is true. Let's hope so.
Delaware State at Temple. I think the Owls moved to 2-1. I think that's an easy pick for me.
Temple for me, he's a very easy pick. So
Temple. Watch out for Temple.
Temple.
They play Penn State the week after, right?
Is it that early?
No. They play Penn State November 15th.
Okay.
Late.
All right. Later in the year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's weird, but yeah.
Yeah. Usually they play them early in the year, right? It's usually one of the first three or four games.
Well,
right.
What happened was Rutgers and Maryland joined, and the schedule got all messed up for the next two or three years.
That makes
sense.
So
they had to maneuver around to get Rutgers and Maryland back on the schedule, and then they had to maneuver their out-of-conference games. Bill, did you know that Penn State they're playing Army next year? They just finished out their 2015 schedule this week.
Yeah.
They just did that. That's next year. There's five straight home games in September and October. So
that's going to be a good team next year too. That's not a bad schedule to have.
Yep. So,
All right.
I'd love for Temple to be 3-0 right now, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Well, how about James Madison at Villanova? We got to go with the Wildcats again.
I'm going to go with the Wildcats, even though JMU is a historic power in that conference, but I like Villanova.
All right. Well, since I went against you guys with the Rutgers pick, I'll go Villanova. I'll be a team player on this one.
Okay, how about the only matchup of the ranked teams this week? Georgia coming off a big win, goes Carolina coming off a big loss. Who do you like, Terry?
Ooh, man, this one's tough. And after watching South Carolina play two games in a row and seeing all the struggles on defense and offensively, they haven't been very crisp. I mean, East Carolina rolled up like almost 500 yards of offense against them. Georgia looks great. I think they're really, they were on a roll after that first game. The thing that I don't like about them, and I'll be quick, I know we don't have a lot of time. I don't like all the publicity that they're getting right now. I think they're going to come into this game, and I think they're going to be a little full of themselves. They're more talented than South Carolina, no doubt. The old ball coach has outcoached Mark Richt in a few games here in the past 4 or 5 years. Even though South Carolina's defense has struggled, I just have a feeling that there's something weird's going to go on, and I think if South Carolina can get off to a good start, if they can get out early against Georgia, I think we could see an upset. So I'm going to go with the second upset pick. I'm going to take South Carolina to upset Georgia, even though my mind tells me Georgia's a much better team, which I do. I think the circumstances are playing. This is it for South Carolina. They lose this game, season's over. So I'm going to go South Carolina in an upset pick over Georgia.
All right, Bill, real quick. I'm going to take Georgia in that game, but I want to go back. Last week you said Fresno State, Nebraska.
Yep.
Terry, what do you like about that? Fresno's 0-2
now. Okay, Keith, before we get to that, I was going to I added this in before
that
you guys didn't see. That's our last pick, Nebraska at Fresno State.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay,
so,
perfect.
So I'm going
to
I'm going to take Georgia. Keith's taking Georgia, and I'll take Nebraska against Fresno State.
Nebraska
Keith?
At Fresno State.
I'll go Big Red. So, Terry, I'm on Big Red, so let's hear what you got. It's your upset.
Yes, I'm going to go Fresno State. I already said it last week. I already called it. Fresno State, now, I don't know if you guys know this, but they have the longest home winning streak of any team in college football at the Division I level at this point. So, Fresno State at home, a night game, one of the tougher places to play at that level. Nebraska goes in, struggled the first two games. Nebraska will not leave Fresno. They will not leave Fresno with a win. Fresno State, even though they're 0-2, they pull off the upset, and they beat Nebraska.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the top of the hour. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partner, Sturry House and the Goon, Keith Collins, for their great insights. We would like to remind our listeners that we will be back next Tuesday night, September 16th at 7 p.m. It'll be my birthday, by the way. And we'll talk week three as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.